Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I am so excited to introduce our guest for the day, Brian Schimmel. Brian, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So everyone, Brian has over 10 years of experience in multifamily insurance, very important topic today. He currently is insuring over 400,000 units nationwide, and he's heavily involved with multifamily syndicators. So very excited to get into some of the considerations that we need to be taking into account with our multifamily investments. So Brian, why don't you start us off with sharing a bit about your background and how you got into this space and why?
Yeah, absolutely. And before I do, I should probably give a little clarification. It's my four partners and I that manage a multifamily group that have about 400,000 units. I wish I had 400,000 units myself, but we do have a sizable footprint as an agency. Our agency partner, BKS Partners, we have one of the larger footprints in the multifamily industry, probably, you know, pushing multiples of that in terms of our units that we ride across the country. But yeah, as far as, you know, my story of how I got into this, you know, I started probably like a lot, you know, like a lot of your listeners in the real estate industry. I was a builder and a developer, much more of a builder than a developer, but for about 10 years. And then back in around 08, you know, we all know, you know, that particular time, how hard the custom home building industry got hit, and it chased me out of it. Unfortunately, I always loved it. It was a great industry, but I had an opportunity to diversify, go into commercial insurance, and was told to, you know, focus on real estate. And that's kind of what I did and have been doing it since then. And, you know, that evolved into a real specialty with just multifamily. We're about, you know, 95% of what I do is multifamily. Now I have clients that own a variety of different asset classes that I also handle. But the, you know, the fact of the matter is multifamily is one of the most difficult placements in the industry. And then especially, you know, at this time right now in the industry, I know a lot of people are really dealing with, you know, increases and just difficulty getting coverage a lot of times. They're getting a lot of scrutiny from lenders on the deals. It's a really, really tough time. What we refer to as kind of a hard market right now. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of companies are having difficulty, you know, navigating. I mean, it's funny. If I go back to 5 or 6 years ago when we were in a soft market, you know, very few people want to talk insurance. And now almost everybody I talk to wants to have a conversation about it because it is just such a large and somewhat uncontrollable, but I won't say unmanageable, you know, expense.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I definitely can't wait to get into some of that. Before we move to insurance, I did want to just touch a little bit more on your experience as a developer and builder and kind of what that was like going through 2008, you know, what it was that made you decide you didn't want to go back to it, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was a matter of timing, you know, and also geographic location where I was building. I was building in Orlando, and ironically, you know, I was able to get out of 2008, you know, not a tremendous amount of financial hardship, you know, like a lot of my contemporaries. I mean, they really just got, you know, hammered in that market because they're all building homes on a speculative basis, you know, and then all of a sudden, no one could get a loan on the homes. I mean, there was, you know, nobody could really get finance for a single family home at that time, which is, you know, a really bad position to be in when you're building new homes. You know, at the same time, I had my first child and, mm-hmm. you know, I had such a background in it and such an, you know, really with some just wonderful partners along the way where I really learned so much about the industry that I looked at it in 2008 and I said, there's not going to be any new homes built at the time. I thought for 5 years, just based upon inventory. I wasn't really that far off of it in terms of if you talk mm-hmm. about custom homes, you know, mm-hmm. like not just the market rebounding, but when the custom home market started to rebound. And I'm like, you know, I don't care to sit on the sidelines for the next 5 years. And so I was like, I can always go back to being a builder. There's nothing going on now anyways. And so I diversified into the real estate insurance. And, you know, it really just kind of fell in love with it. I mean, it's kind of fascinating in a lot of ways. I kind of feel like I'm part of the deal, just a different side of the deal now, you know. And obviously, you've got to understand the ins and outs from the insurance perspective. But I try to kind of relate it to my clients in more of a business owner format, because that's kind of my background. I was an insurance buyer for a long, long time. I didn't pay as much attention to it as I should have. I got a quick education on it when all of a sudden we decided to sell part of the company and I took off a portion of the company, had to set up my own company, had to buy my own insurance myself without any partners, and went about setting that up, and then started realizing what a bad deal we had been getting for so many years, you know, and how exposed we were in certain areas. And that's honestly kind of what made, when all of a sudden the insurance opportunity came up, I was like, it's interesting because I had been through such a horrible experience with it previously and realized how much we were overpaying for it and how exposed we really were. I was blind at the time, had no idea. I don't know how we, looking back, you know, with my insurance background now, I'm not real sure how we escaped, quite frankly.
Okay. Interesting. Yes. So can you dive a little bit more into that? Like, what were you overpaying for, and how were, even though you were overpaying, how were you also exposed?
Well, I mean, you know, we had a lot of employees. It was, you know, at the height, we probably had 70 or 80 employees. You know, I feel like we were pretty good people to work for. Like, we felt like we were friends with all of our employees. And like, that's was probably the first mistake. Next thing you know, we had an embezzlement issue from a person in purchasing. I don't even remember what the real numbers were, but it was, I think it was close to $100,000, $200,000. You know, whoa, uncovered. You know, nothing there for that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we didn't have, you know, any sort of crime coverage or anything like that that was in place. And then, you know, all of a sudden we started layoffs in the industry. And the next thing you know, you're getting employment claims, to, you know, wrongful firing, whatever it might be. You know, had to deal with a couple of those. Luckily, none of them were very big at the time. You know, now those are actually can be some pretty sizable claims. Back then it was, you know, you gave somebody a couple extra weeks or something and they, and, you know, and it went away. You know, it was things like that. But the real shocking thing was, you know, when I learned how much we were paying for general liability insurance at the time. And then I got a quote for this little tiny company and from the same agent, you know, and it was still a really big number. And I went out and just started shopping it with no idea how to shop it, which is a big issue in the industry. And delivered an unbelievable amount of savings just from, you know, from doing that. But what it took was learning insurance, which is what I see when I say learn it. You don't have to understand every aspect of it. But, you know, I do have a lot of clients that don't pay close enough attention to it or understand really the difference between a property policy and a liability policy and an excess policy. They don't understand always where rates are coming from. You know, they, you know, I've never wanted to sit up here and just defend carriers, you know, or anything like that. But the reality is the rates are coming from actuarial data. You know, they're being driven by the amount of claims being paid out in a, you know, in a certain, you know, area or geographic area or with a certain exposure, like assault and battery or something like that. Like, they're using the data behind the scenes to develop the rates. And unfortunately, that's not trending right now in a favorable direction. And people are seeing increases and they don't understand why. You know, nobody's ever bought insurance and walked out of it, so that was a great deal, right? I mean, it's always an expense, but, you know, the reality is when you look at, you know, all the units that we write across the country and you see the claims, and then you look at the amount that has been paid out in claims over a period of time, say like 3 or 4, 5 years, and you look at how much has been paid in premium over that 5 year period. In the habitational space right now, it's very rare that I see a client who's been profitable for a carrier. And for a lot of years, there was always a carrier that would come to the marketplace, somebody we knew of, where we could probably go, you know, and get, you know, a better quote. And in this market, I mean, yes, I mean, I guess technically that still exists, but the quotes that most are getting are, you know, probably more than they were, you know, anticipating because of the reasons that I'm giving you. I mean, they're, the general liability claims do not seem to end.
Yeah.
The weather-related property claims do not seem to end. And those losses are factored into everyone's rates.
Yeah, you know? For sure. So you know, from a multifamily investor perspective, how would you think about insurance and, you know, how to factor in like increases in your underwriting, pro forma, and just anything else that might be relevant?
Well, I would say that you, and I'm not saying this as a self-serving commercial, I really mean this when I say you need to be working with somebody that not only understands insurance, but really has an understanding of multifamily. Mm-hmm. I think an aspect of my industry that I'm not favorable of is that a lot of agents, producers, whatever you want to call them, they specialize in a variety of different industries. And rarely do they delve into one industry really deeply and just hang their hat on it. You know, it's diversification is usually good, right? But the reality is that when you get into something as complex as multifamily insurance really is, it's kind of surprising to most. But, you know, you put 300 families in one single complex, there tends to be claims and things like that, and, you know, they can be numerous. You really need, I think, somebody that really understands all aspects of the multifamily insurance and all aspects of the industry itself. I mean, working with lenders, you know, all day long, I'm getting coverages approved by lenders for closing. And if those coverages don't get approved, it doesn't close. And there are times when lenders need to be challenged on values or on coverages that they might be requesting that are costing, you know, a buyer a lot of money in premium, number one. But that premium, I mean, you know, being a cost, I mean, and especially at the cap rates that are being sold today, you know, a $10,000 savings in premium is not just $10,000. That's a lot of value on the table. You know, we get that. But then at the same time, I really think you need to look at the relationship from a long-term perspective and be very strategic about how you place your insurance. What I see most commonly is investors start accumulating properties. They do one, they do two, they got a couple different, and, you know, could technically you could have six policies or more, but you could have six policies in your primary coverages on two properties alone. And then all of a sudden, a couple years later, and you've got six or eight properties, you're going to be in a nonstop insurance renewal.
Yeah.
The stress of it, the meetings of it, the supplying information for it, everything else, because you just have so many different renewal dates. And so, you know, looking to where you can get consolidation, you know, I think is very key. Everybody always thinks of consolidation in terms of, oh, you know, if I wrap them all together, I'll save a bunch of money. That's not really the reality in today's market, per se. Now, if you have, you know, 4,000, 5,000 units, that's different. That can start to play. But when, you know, the numbers that it takes to move the needle in insurance are so large, you know, you really don't need to think about it from a saving standpoint. Think about it from, you know, a consolidation standpoint.
Okay.
It frees you up to focus on other things. You can consolidate your coverages, be uniform across your properties, you know, so you don't have a, you know, $25,000 deductible at this property and a $5,000 deductible at another property. You know, let's just try to get those uniform so you can start making your own projections, you know, of what you think your risk might be, you know, moving forward. Those are just some things that kind of come to mind.
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-cap.com, and sign up for our newsletter. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, a lot of valuable insights there. And I think it does make sense to, especially when it comes to something like this, to specialize, to work with someone who specializes in multifamily, you know, just so that, you know, they're bringing the most knowledge to the table. Yeah.
Well, because it's not just insurance. I mean, like, I'll give you our typical flow with our clients would look something like this. They tell us they're acquiring a property. They send me the OM. The first thing I do with the OM is I start pouring through it and I start looking at the factors that are going to affect the premium. Okay. You know, how old's the building? How much square footage is it? How many buildings are there? You know, probably the two most important items are how old is the roof? And is the wiring copper, remediated aluminum, or unremediated aluminum? You know, and the losses would be the third biggest factor. If I have those three pieces of information, to be honest with you, I could figure out a way to get the property written. But that, you know, there's more, but those are the three, you know, key pieces of information that we really need to know. And so when I pour into that OM, if I see a client who's, you know, hot on a deal right now, but the property has 20-year-old roofs, well, they're going to really struggle to find coverage with 20-year-old roofs. And they might not be budgeting for it in their capital expenditures at that time. But from my world, 20-year roof means that any carrier willing to offer any sort of reasonable rate is not going to give you full what we call replacement cost value, meaning if your 20-year-old roof blows off, they just come put a new roof on it without any depreciation factor. That's replacement cost. They're not going to do that on a 20-year roof. I mean, would you as an underwriter want to write a multifamily property with 10 buildings and the roofs are 20 years old? I mean, this is what they do. So they look at it and they say, no, thank you. But that ultimately causes is your lender. Fannie and Freddie have no waiver to this whatsoever. Every single part of the policy has to be replacement cost coverage, no factor for depreciation. So when that OM hits my desk and I see a 20-year-old roof, I'm calling my client to say, hey, this is the impact. You're not going to clear lending with this. It's going to need a new roof, or you're going to pay such an astronomical sum of money for insurance that you need to put that into your underwriting. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How does that definitely make sense? And just to kind of pivot to a related subject, how does climate change, how is that impacting what's going on right now in the insurance space for multifamily?
Yeah, I mean, regardless of your own personal view, you know, I mean, of climate change, the underwriters are factoring it in. They believe in it. They have data that they would say supports it. You know, the insurance industry looks in the they look forward, most definitely, but they also look in the rearview mirror so many times and just kind of assume that that same path is going to continue. And that path today would be for property insurance. The Midwest is going to get hammered with hail. If you ride a property in the Midwest, you're probably going to have a hail claim on your roof before long. If you're in Florida, you better get ready for a hurricane because, you know, that they seem to keep coming, you know, even though Florida hadn't been hit real hard, I'd say in the last few years, but just catastrophically exposed states. The hurricanes are going to keep coming, you know, so they're factoring in money for rates on that. But it's just all the different, you know, impacts of climate change, I guess, are being factored into their underwriting. And I mean, I don't know of a carrier anywhere that's not.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, say somebody brings you a deal and shows you the OM and you factor in certain things. What would you suggest for a increase, like an annual increase in insurance coverage? Is there like a baseline or is it really vary by property and location?
You know, the market's like, believe it or not, is fluctuates like the stock market, just on a much slower trajectory. You know, we're in a hard market right now. So if you were to ask me, what would I do if I were in your shoes?
Can you define that, the hard market for our listeners?
Yeah, you have two types of markets. You have hard markets and soft markets. It's just a buyer's versus a seller's market. Hard market's a seller's market right now. You know, these underwriters really feel like they're doing you a favor if they offer you a habitational quote on a property because they're not extremely desirable right now. And for all those weather-related claims that I talked about, coupled with all the general liability claims that are occurring, the assault and batteries, the slip and falls, the size of the verdicts. I'd like to talk about social inflation maybe in a minute because that's kind of how it's all wrapped around. All the way to, you know, even auto liability claims. I know it's not traditionally a multifamily thing, but almost across the board in the insurance industry, you know, the claims are going up. And so the rates are going up and the amount of carriers that are offering coverage is going down. People are exiting the market, not entering the market. If it was a profitable market, people would run to it. It's not a profitable market, so many are running from it. The ones that remain are charging what they want to charge. That's the hard market that we're in. From, you know, 2010 to 2018, we were probably in a soft market. I mean, almost every renewal that I delivered was a decrease, you know, flat, you know, unless they had a whole lot of losses or claims. I mean, the renewals were not very stressful. In this market, you know, if you've had no claims, if you stayed claim-free, you're probably going to get a little bit of an increase, but it's probably not going to be anything too substantial. Okay. I think, you know, but it is situational. I'll also say, I mean, if you're with a carrier that gave you really low rates last year and they're leaving the marketplace, you might have to go to one of the remaining carriers, and it might seem like your increase is very large. But if you stay with your current carrier, maybe 5%, you know, increases on property. The GL varies much more. There's been so many carriers just change their appetite within the general liability. But I would probably budget 10 for general liability, but it can honestly be multiples of that too. Again, for situations.
Wow.
And then the excess markets, which, you know, everybody needs a, you know, smaller deals, $2, $3 million excess, mid-sized deals, $5 million, some of the larger properties, $10 million excess policy. That used to be something that we did. And, you know, in an hour or two following us getting all the property and liability quotes, it was just kind of the no-brainer coverage. You know, you get a quote on it real quickly. And now getting an excess quote is very difficult because of that social inflation thing that I mentioned a minute ago.
Yeah. And can you touch on that now? Like, what do you think is going on with social inflation?
Yeah, I would say just in general, let's just keep it at, you know, the amount of lawsuits, I think, is way up. You know, the size of the verdicts that are coming down are so large, you know, right now. And I think kind of in a place, you know, in, in the world right now, culturally, where, I mean, if something does happen, you know, at a property somewhere, I mean, the, people are looking for who to blame, you know, for whatever occurred. Meaning the owner, you know, of the property many times, you know. And so in general, the number of lawsuits and the size of the lawsuits, the nuclear verdicts that are sometimes coming down when things go through a full trial are, has been kind of framed around like social inflation or termed social inflation. And where I say, I believe, and it's kind of personal belief, where it relates to the excess markets is in the way that many of the verdicts and many of the settlements that take place when there is a claim are now much larger than the limits provided with your core general liability policy. The way that it works with most properties are written with a $1 million limit for general liability for each claim that occurs at the property, up to $2 million in total for the year. Okay, so for any individual claim, you're only going to have $1 million. You have the excess policy, which attaches to that effectively, to where if that claim that you had turns out to be a $2 million claim, well, $1 million would come from your primary GL and $1 million would come from your excess carrier. Okay. And that's kind of the way it works. And so I think because of this social inflation, the size of these verdicts, everything else that's taken place, that many of these claims have now infiltrated into that excess layer. And these excess carriers are paying out claims now that historically there weren't as many hitting the excess layer. But now, just because the verdicts are bigger, many are. That's really about the most simplified way I can describe.
Yeah, totally. And do you have any thoughts on what we can attribute these increases in verdicts to? I mean, like, obviously the courts are doing it.
Yeah.
And like, why they would be, you know, moving in this direction? Are they aware of what's happening in the insurance industry? Is it just like, is it just because we have a litigious society?
I mean, really, I just really feel like we just have a much more litigious society, you know, at this point, you know, in general. But I also think that the way that the internet, the way that social media, you know, if you have a bad experience at a property, you promote it over social media, you get a whole, you know, storm of people behind you and everything supporting you. And they may only be hearing one side of the story, but it's your side, right? And so, you know, anything that happens at your property, the police get called, it's probably going to hit the newspaper. You know what I mean? There's a services, I think, that prescribe to see all the calls that went out and all the calls that occurred. And so some things that probably nobody even knew about years ago, everybody knows about now. And I think that's a major reason why you have so many lawsuits. And, you know, what do you do as a carrier where if you look back historically, you only had, just making up numbers, but 1,000 lawsuits or the same set of units. And now you look at it 2021 and you have 3,000. You know, it has to be accounted for, you know.
Yeah. I mean, just like thinking about the future, like what do you think kind of needs to happen in order to kind of bring things back into alignment? Or is there anything that can be done?
I do think, you know, when you get into the legal stuff and the court system, that's the one area that I just tend to just kind of gloss over and not pay as much attention to, you know, in terms of, you know, how does the industry, you know, or how do we improve the environment in some way? But, you know, I would say just in general, that I think there does need to be some tort reform. I mean, you know, the reality is you take an assault and battery claim. If somebody gets shot, beat up, stabbed, whatever, at one of your properties, it is going to hit the press at some level, local news, national news, whatever it might be. And there is going to be an army of attorneys that are going to be there to represent anybody injured, any remaining family members, whatever it might be. And, you know, I get calls all the time of, you know, hey, I had a shooting at my property, but it's not our fault. And I have to say, I understand, you know, but at the end of the day, it's your property and somebody was shot there. And I would say there's a good chance there's going to be a claim made against the property. And it always happens. Mm-hmm. I've got clients who would tell you the same thing.
Yeah,
Oh, no, sure. We've got nothing with this. The lawsuits tend to come.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. Well, you know, I think you've given us like some really good insights into what we can do to respond to an environment that we can't necessarily control ourselves. And, you know, presumably if everybody is going to be needing these types of coverage, then rents will just, you know, need to be adjusted in line with that. And yeah.
I would say in closing, if you really want to do the most effective thing to control your insurance costs, make sure you don't have any deferred maintenance around your properties. Make sure you're walking your properties, looking for trip hazards. Do your best to get the, you know, very best tenants in there you can. Try to always be improving, you know, the quality of your tenants. You know, try to have good customer service. It's surprising. My clients that do that see a significant, much less claims than clients who, you know, have deferred maintenance and don't have very good customer service. And those clients, you know, tend to have a lot more claims than the clients who really try to stay on top of the properties. I would say that. And you also really want to maintain very good information on your properties.
Yeah.
Know your roof ages, know all the COPE information for your buildings, know the square footages, like have that sort of data there. I mean, that's kind of what we streamline for our clients, but have that sort of data there to where, you know, you have your hands around what you own and how it's managed. And my clients that do that, they don't have the issues with insurance that others do.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's super valuable advice and, you know, something that's very actionable for all of us in the multifamily space. Thank you so much, Brian, for coming on the show. I would love to have you share with the listeners how they can learn more about you and anything else you want to share.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'd love to give my email address and phone number. The name of our agency is Tanner Bloom Maloof. We're part of the BKS Partners, which is a large national agency. And I can be reached via email at brian.schimmel@tbmins.com. I'll now spell it because I know that's difficult, but it's brian.schimmel@tbmins.com
Awesome. Okay, great, Brian. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I hope you all, anybody who's looking for multifamily insurance, check Brian out. And awesome stuff, Brian. We'll see you next time.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.